Welcome to the Empowered Dancers podcast, where we talk openly about all things empowerment in the salsa, bachata and kizomba scene. Join me as I talk about the highs and lows of Latin dancing, as well as interviewing some incredible people on their stories, experiences and points of view, both in the dancing and beyond. Go to empowereddancers.com/5ways for 5 tips to boost your confidence on the social dance floor. I'm Bobby Miles, that's Bobby with an IE and Miles as in distance. Pierre is a dancer, teacher and DJ based in London, and he has been DJing and teaching since 2004, both salsa and bachata. He was a musician before he started dancing, and this gives his approach to teaching a very dance music flavour, where music is as much a part of the dance as the dancers themselves are. I'm thrilled to not only have a seasoned teacher and DJ here with me, but also a teacher who uses his voice to engage others in conversations that are important to him in the social dance scene. Thank you so much and welcome, Pierre.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Fantastic. Could you start by telling us a little bit about how you got into salsa? You've been in the salsa and bachata world for 25 years now.
Yeah.
How did that start? What sparked the interest?
As many stories do, the story begins with a girl. I was going out with someone at the time, and she literally dragged me along to a salsa class with her, and started taking a few lessons, found out I actually enjoyed it. And then, to cut a long story short, we split up. I carried on going to salsa classes. And after a year or so, I actually met who is the girl who is now my wife at a salsa class, and we've been together ever since. She's my wife, mother of my children, and also my dance partner as well.
So, oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, I've heard so many wonderful love stories from salsa.
Before I actually got into salsa, I was a musician. My sister was always the dancer in the family. And I was always hiding behind a guitar or a microphone or a keyboard. It took someone to actually drag me along to a dance class to actually get me into moving rather than playing. So, yeah.
And cool. Thank goodness they did, because you're everywhere now.
Yeah, too many places for me.
Yeah, you're such a household name for UK salsa bachata.
I don't know if that's either a good thing or a bad thing.
What? I'm not sure. Oh, fab. And then you started teaching about 5 years later?
My wife, she actually coaxed me into it because she's actually a proper dancer. She's trained in tap, ballet, modern, jazz. And she was learning salsa in order to teach it. So she was already a well-established teacher in her own right. And for the first couple of years of teaching together, I was basically her assistant.
Yeah.
So she was the main voice in the class, and I sort of learned how to teach by assisting her as a teacher. And that's how I got into the teaching. But I was already a DJ, not for salsa or bachata, but I used to DJ weddings. I used to DJ, because I used to be in a band as well. So I used to DJ while I was between the sets in the band. I've been DJing since I was about 15. And I didn't get into dancing until I was sort of mid-20s. Mm. So, yeah, I already had sort of 10 years experience as a DJ. And then after taking up the dancing and starting teaching with my wife, I was also doing the DJing as well. So, yeah.
That's really cool. So you started teaching by being an assistant first, and that's quite a cool way to become a teacher. So I've done quite a similar thing. I was assisting before I was teaching. What do you think, how has that helped you be the, well, I haven't been in your lessons yet, but I've heard wonderful things about your lessons. So what do you think is, how do you think that has helped shaped you to be such a good rounded teacher?
Well, I think with anything, especially when it comes to, with teaching, the most important thing is to get experience and build up that experience of teaching in a smaller sort of focused, closed environment under the tutelage of someone else with more experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's how a lot of the best teachers sort of emerged, if you like, because like at the time when I was learning, there were nowhere near as many schools as there are now.
Yeah.
So like they were always looking to take on people to sort of mentor them, to build them up, to become teachers. So they'd become part of the team. They'd start helping out in the classes, and then they'd start shadowing other teachers. And then they'd sort of eventually be given control of a class. But you'd sort of build up that experience locally within your local clubs.
Yeah.
And then hopefully your experience grows, your reputation as a teacher grows. Then you start getting invited to sort of more local events, regional events, national events, international events.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it took me a good sort of 5-6 years of teaching in my local clubs before I was invited to my first national event. And then another sort of 3 or 4 years after that to get invited to my first international event.
Yeah.
Just seems to me today that everyone seems to be in a bit of a rush to be that international teacher. I mean, I see some teachers, sort of international teachers, who've literally been dancing for 2 years, let alone teaching.
It
all seems to have been sort of fast tracked nowadays. Yes.
It's that instant gratification age we're in, where we've got Amazon Prime next day delivery. It's almost feeding through to all parts of our life, where it's student today, teacher tomorrow. Yeah, fair.
I mean, that's how I sort of got into it. I'd done about sort of 4 years of classes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so 4 years. I started in 2001, met my wife in 2003. We opened a club sort of mid-2004. So, yeah, about 4 years of classes. And then sort of teaching together, me as her assistant for 2 years before I started branching out my own. So,
that's a fab foundation to have to build up so thoroughly, because foundations make everyone great, I feel.
Yeah. I mean, in the beginning, I wasn't a great teacher.
Well, no one's good at things when they first start it, right? Like when you first start learning to tie your shoelace, you're not very good at it. You have to practice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but you got to go through that process of
definitely
learning your craft, learning what works, learning what to say, learning how to reframe things from different perspectives, deal with different personalities. Some people prefer more sort of physical learning. Some people like to be spoken to. Some people like jokes. Some people don't like jokes. Some people, all these different ways of getting your point across.
Yes.
And that's where the experience is important.
Yeah.
Because when you go and teach at all of these different events, every crowd is different. You need to know how to adapt to your crowd. And I think that comes from that experience that you gain in your early days.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I've come from the teaching world as well. I used to be a secondary school teacher, and it was very much like that as well, that we learn by doing, but in that kind of guided, structured way. And that adaptability was something we had to learn so that we could work with the different groups we were faced with on different days and things. Yeah,
definitely. I mean, I've got a teaching background as well. I used to teach music. I also used to teach IT in sort of further education colleges and stuff. So,
cool.
Teaching
just runs through everything you do.
Yeah, I think it helps. I mean, there's a lot of skills that you can bring into teaching dance. It's like, I also have a background in martial arts. I used to play sports as well.
Yeah.
So all of those things feeding in. So the DJing, the teaching, the martial arts, the instruments, the music background, the DJing, that's all sort of fed into my approach to teaching.
So. Yeah, because musicality is a huge part for you.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you had a very interesting Facebook post recently where you talked about musicality coming at the cost of a connection with another person during a dance.
Yeah, it's just something that I've been experiencing recently because, there's all sorts of posts on Facebook about like people not following the music and everything else, but in bachata, musicality is actually really important. And a lot of teachers have started teaching musicality, and I think that's great. It's really awesome. But what I'm experiencing on the dance floor now is that it's a very selfish sort of musicality. It's I hear the song in this way, and I'm going to dance it this way, regardless of who I'm dancing it with. So normally you think about leaders sort of enforcing their musicality on the follower, but I'm also experiencing it from the other side where I'm dancing and the follower is doing completely her own thing. And I'm sort of just there, sort of holding her hand while she does it, you
Yeah, not really involved in the dance so much.
Yeah. And to me, that might be musicality on a personal level, but that's not what musicality is about. Musicality is about creating harmony, in a musical sense, but also in a dance sense as well. That harmony with the music, with your partner. And if your musicality is actually creating discord with your partner, then it's not a very musical form of musicality.
Yeah, I'd agree, because you lose that conversation, that dialogue that you're having with each other, kind of becomes just a one-way monologue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you might as well be dancing two dancers separately in front of each other.
Which is all well and good. There is a time and place for that. And if your partner is up for that, cool. But many people in the social perhaps wouldn't be.
Exactly. So the fact that people are teaching musicality is great, but again, the way that it's being taught is being taught in a sort of very, this is how you do things rather than how you achieve musicality in partner work. And there's a very different mentality to it. It's like, as a musician, if I'm playing as a soloist versus me accompanying someone else, me accompanying the singer, right? It's two different mentalities. So it's the same when it comes to dancing. If you're a solo dancer, you approach musicality in one way. If you're dancing with a partner, you have to approach it in a different way. It's that same differentiation for me.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, I like that analogy. That really works. You want to overshadow your singer, but you don't want to disappear on them. You need to kind of work in partnership.
Exactly.
Okay. So, in your experience as a teacher, you've also, because you've got a fantastic voice on Facebook, on social media, you really use your position to raise these conversations, which I love. I think it's fantastic. And it'd be great to see you inspiring more people to do that. We need more of it. And in there you go. That's what we're doing here. In there as well, you spoke about dodgy comments in lessons.
I think you may have taken that post a little bit wrong, just to say, because like I was saying that sometimes dodgy comments can help, right? But also sometimes dodgy comments can be offensive, right? There's
Go
two
on, yeah.
sides. There's two sides to that coin. Sometimes you have to walk a very fine line. It's like sometimes. So I'll say to my class, if I have a class where all of the followers happen to be female, all the leaders happen to be male, right? So in that sort of environment, I'll always say to the ladies, don't drop your hands when you come out of a turn, because they turn, they drop their hands down by their sides, and then the guy's trying to go for the hand, the lights are dark, the music's fast, he's putting his hand out to take her hand's not there, he's going to grab something else. So that's a dodgy comment, helps it stick in their mind. And they don't drop their hands anymore. They always keep their hands up. So that's when a dodgy comment can help. But there's also like inappropriate comments that you can make as well. And I don't think that's helpful at all. Like even the language that we use nowadays is changed. Rather than men and women, we're now saying leaders and followers, recognizing that men can be followers, women can be leaders, men can dance with men, women can dance with women, all good.
It's great to hear you saying that. I have come across some lessons where I hear it quite consistently, leaders, followers, but still quite a lot I'm hearing ladies, men, guys, girls.
I mean, I have to admit, I still say ladies and men, but I make a conscious effort to say leaders and followers, especially when I know that there's, if all the leaders are male and all the followers are female, I allow myself to relapse to male and female, right? But if I know that there are like female leaders, I often get female leaders in my class, so I will adapt my language in that sense.
I mean, it's not about getting it right all the time. It's like you said, with teaching, when you start out, it's trial and error. You get things right sometimes, wrong other times. It's the same with changing anything. So changing language in class or things like that. It's not going to be perfect all the time. But as you say, it's the effort that counts.
Yeah. But I mean, for me, this is nothing new. I've danced with men for ages. One of my best friends, when I was learning to dance, was a guy called Lee Wright. Mm-hmm. And he was a very young dancer, amazing, amazing dancer, but he could follow better than many of the women that I knew at the time. And we always used to dance together. I'm mentioning him in the past tense because unfortunately he passed away in a car accident. He was an amazing dancer. There's videos of him dancing with Super Mario on YouTube. You can go and look at them if you want to. So for me, I've always been happy dancing with men. My wife, being a teacher, she was always a female leader. This is nothing new for me, the whole concept of non-gender normative roles in dancing. It seems to be quite a new thing for a lot of dancers. I think it's great. We do have to be conscious of the language that we use in class and try not to offend people unnecessarily.
Yeah.
You're not always going to get it right, but as long as you acknowledge when you've got it wrong.
This is it, acknowledging when you get it wrong. And I tend to think that more as an inclusive, my aim is to be inclusive rather than not to offend. Mainly because I think in today's age, it's very difficult to not offend anyone ever.
Exactly.
Everyone's very different, and we've got to be okay with being offended sometimes.
Well, there's getting over it. There's a difference between being offensive and taking offense. So
true.
So if I say something without the intention to offend, but someone takes offense at that, then there's got to be an acknowledgement on both parts.
Certainly.
So, So that's the way I look at it, anyway.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you again.
This has been wonderful. I love it. Thank you.
That's right.
And it's really cool because doing this now with the podcast, I am getting to speak to some people that I just haven't met before. And I've seen their faces or their names around for the last couple of years, but haven't put like a voice to the name, for instance, or sometimes a name to the face. So this has been fab. And yours is a face I've seen around on different posters and things. So it's fab to put a voice and a story to that face. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me again.
Thank you for listening to the Empowered Dancers podcast. If there's an aspect of the dancing you would like to hear about or a particular teacher you would like to hear from, drop me a message and I will try to make it happen. Make sure you subscribe to get every episode as it comes out. Thank you so much for the comments and questions you are already sharing. I really, really appreciate it, and I look forward to serving you in next week's episode.